And good morning, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick here with you over on the east side. Darren McFarland will be joining us momentarily here. Chase McCabe filling in the afternoon with Jared Stillman on vacation. He is working the show with Floyd Reese. And so we continue to move forward. We've got another lineup of excellent conversations here with you. We've got Tim Hasselbeck back on the show today at high noon. Chris Mason will join us as he normally does at 1 o'clock, and we'll get a good conversation going with him. Jackie McMullen from ESPN, a great get for us. She will be joining us at 10:15. So if you're hanging with us right now, you're going to want to hear that for sure. Joe Fisher will join us, the voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores. If you missed it yesterday, we announced a big partnership with them on our radio group, the Cromwell Group. We will be carrying football and men's basketball for the Commodores going forward on 93.3 Classic Hits. So Joe will join us at 11 o'clock to talk about that. And Ford Ice Center is back open. Danny Butler will join us and talk about how that process is going. Really excited to get a lot of the youngsters back on the ice. I've been hearing a lot of conversations going on, all the hard work they've been doing to get those facilities back up and running. So that's coming your way at 11:30. So a lot of great things happening. Let's see if we got Darren on there. I think I hear Darren on the line. Are you there?
I think I'm here. I hope I'm here. I hear audio. That's always a good sign. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't hear any audio before the show. So good lineup, as you said, today, and we're excited about that. Jackie McMullen in the on-deck circle. Speaking of on-deck circle, segue to baseball. It looks like, things are headed in the right direction. I don't know. There still could be hesitation with me, at least, until we see this really happen. I don't know. We feel like we've been scarred a little bit, but it does look like opening day is going to be either July 23rd or 24th. Training camps are set to begin on July 1st, and it looks like baseball is coming back, and that would be the last sport we've been talking about. And it looks like they're prepared to have a 60-game season.
Well, they're going to play if they can play. Now the issue is not a business issue. It's a health issue. And like everything else that's going on around the country, we've got, some real troublesome rise in the virus. And it's manifesting itself as a lot of the sports start to gather their players. I'm not sure if you saw the story down in the Tampa area, where a lot of the Phillies players and personnel tested positive. And what's troublesome about it is they were doing all of the protocols, right? And this is got to be alarming to all of us who have kids playing baseball right now, right? They were trying to do things right. They were working out in small groups. They would take their temperature coming in. They were washing their hands. They were doing all that stuff. But when they left the facility, they were all on their own. And boom, they had a big outbreak, six or seven players, five or six members of the training staff or, personnel that was there, and they had to shut it down. So this is going to be a big challenge for baseball because, as we said yesterday, right, they're not going to do the bubble. They're trying to play in their home parks and run a 60-game schedule. Most of it will have limited travel, but you will have to go from, for example, New York to Washington, or New York to Boston, or New York to Philadelphia. And then when you go home, right? And you're on the honor system. So what are the chances that you could get through the whole season without big issues there? The more people look at it, there's a lot of health experts that are really worried that they'll be able to execute this. And I think you have a better chance if you're in the bubble, like the NBA and the NHL are doing.
And MLS. I guess what I would say is, okay, why is this coming up now? I mean, that nothing's changed, and so we knew that baseball wasn't going to be in a bubble. What's changed? The other sports, NASCAR isn't in a bubble. UFC isn't in a bubble. Golf is back. They're not in a bubble. So what's changed on that front? I'm a little confused on why now there's issues concerning this when we've known this all along. They weren't going to be in a bubble. It wasn't going to be in a controlled environment. I mean, yes, safety precautions and things will be taking place, but what's changed on that front? We knew that weren't going to be the entire league in one city playing baseball all day.
Right. Well, it's just a concern, right? It's not anything that anybody's hoping for. This is what they've chosen to do. They're hoping to execute it. And let's hope that they can. But I think, as we've seen already, there's going to be some blips, right? There's going to be people that test positive, and it's going to be very important that you don't let that, you know, infiltrate your whole clubhouse, right? So that you have a real problem with the team not being able to play. You're going to have – there's all this talk about what they're going to do. Even talk of having a couple of teams sitting in Nashville of unsigned players to pull from should you need them. And then there's a lot of talk of having a separate camp of other players so that if one camp gets infiltrated, the other one you could call up players from. So there's all kinds of measures they're thinking about in order to get through this season. But, you know, it's one thing to get through the season, and then it's another thing, Darren. If, let's say, you know, the team that wins the World Series isn't necessarily the best team, but one that was fortunate enough to be the cleanest team, right, and didn't have as many problems with virus as maybe a really good team. That could be part of the story of this really short season that they're going to play.
It could. There's no doubt about it.
And that would be the case with any sport, but especially baseball, that, you know, it's just the concept of you've got 30 guys going home and coming back. You know, if they all go to the bar and then they come back, that's, you know, the chances are better that something bad's going to happen. And you make a good point about NASCAR. They're not in a bubble. They're traveling. And so far, so good, right? I don't know if there's been any stories about any positive tests with the group that's traveling from city to city, but I guess they've done okay in that area, right?
Yeah, and I mean, football, you know, as of right now, I mean, their plan is full steam ahead. And
right, well, some people are skeptical of that plan, for sure, but...
they will not be in a bubble.
No,
college
football, I know, but they haven't done it yet. Like, they're hoping to do it, but I don't know how it's going to play out. None of us do.
No. No, it's certainly – look, we know it's a risk, and we know – we don't know how it's going to play out. But I think, quite honestly, the way this whole thing has played out on the baseball front to this point, it's going to be marred with, you know, people wanting an asterisk or just not feeling the same way that you're supposed to feel when you're crowned champ, no matter what. You know, 60-game regular season, all the squabbling back and forth – the thing you just laid out, you know, how much has that come into effect for people to use as an excuse? Well, yeah, you know, this team never tested positive. This team had 6 positive tests, and it affected them greatly. I think already there's so much in play. It's going to be, in my opinion, virtually impossible for a fan base to feel truly the same about their team winning if, indeed, you know, whoever is crowned champ. I think it's going to have a weird feeling attached to it. I don't think there's any way around it. I don't know how at this point you could feel normal, considering all the circumstances that have gone on around Major League Baseball with whoever's crowned champ, their fan base, and everybody collectively feels great about it. Like, yep, they deserve it. They're the champ. It'll be hard. It'll be hard, in my opinion. I think 2020.
I don't think
gonna,
there's any. There's no
gonna,
question.
We're gonna know, right? You're gonna say, yeah, but it was 2020, and everybody's gonna like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, true. Right.
Of course. This will always be different. Tyler Kepner wrote a good article about this yesterday. But Mike Stanton, remember him, former Braves pitcher, Yankees pitcher, left-hander, pitched forever, right, for a long time, very good setup man. He said, the teams that lose, they'll be the ones going, well, it's not for real. They didn't play 162. They didn't have the marathon. But for the team that wins, it'll be just as special as any other. He's talking about from a player's perspective. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, even more so because of the trials and tribulations that everybody has gone through to get to that point. This will be a year that everyone remembers. Everyone. So that is true, Darren. If we're lucky enough to be alive in 2040 and 2050, we will look back and say, 2020, we remember what happened that year.
Oh,
right? I mean, we will never forget 2020 from all kinds of angles, not just a sports angle.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be something to be said for that.
No doubt. Quickly, before we get to Jackie McMullen on the other side, extra innings Teams will begin with a runner on second base. The National League will use a designated hitter. So there is going to be some wrinkles, and it is going to look different. The trading deadline will be August 31st. We talked about, you know, what Jason Stark quickly he tweeted out yesterday. MLB has been talking with Nashville about having two teams there of unsigned players. They would serve as an emergency pool and would make $400 a week. MLB teams would have to pay a fee to Nashville to sign one of those players. So there's
can we try out for this team, Darren?
I mean, there's
your arms in shape.
Says,
you've been throwing.
Yeah, well, right now I've got a sleeve on my arm, so I'm already banged up. It's pathetic. I literally
$400 a week,
now.
a little extra cash. Can we do the show and then go over to the park and do our workouts and stuff and just be on site, make our $400 a week, and then hope nobody calls up, and you know, so we don't have to embarrass ourselves.
I don't know. Is there a movie to be made from these tryouts?
It could be.
I don't know.
The Summer of Nashville during 2020.
There could
in the
be.
Bullpen.
Invincible Part 2.
I mean, I'll just go
side.
Hit fungos. I just want to go hit fungos to the guys. That's what I'll do.
That could be fun. There's things
I'll
we can do.
Throw a little BP, hit some fungos.
See, I'm with you. I'm more with, like, yeah, let's have a roll. I'm not necessarily looking to try out because that would be embarrassing. But how about a roll of hanging out and putting us to use? We can do things.
Shag flies?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Can do that stuff.
Take the ball bucket back up to the pitcher throwing BP. I mean, there's
absolutely
all kinds of stuff we can do.
I could throw BP. I mean, I can do that. I can. So
be part of the grounds crew.
We'll ask. You know, maybe we'll submit our names and see if they laugh or not. We'll come back. Jackie McMullen from ESPN. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Our weekly chat with Tim Hasselbeck coming up at noon today, so we'll get into some NFL and Titans stuff with him coming up in less than 2 hours. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's an honor and a pleasure to bring in our next guest, Jackie McMullen from ESPN. Does a lot of great work, been at it for a long time. You can see her work around the horn. She's been covering the NBA and a columnist for a long, long time, and she now joins us. Jackie, how you doing?
Good, guys. How's our things today?
Things in Nashville are good.
Quiet,
no complaints.
Huh?
It is a little quiet, but, you know, this is the new norm. We've been doing this all from our homes for, gosh, near 4 months now, and this is just what it is. So, you know.
Exactly.
If we're complaining.
I got a studio next door. I got a studio, a TV studio, full studio next door.
There you go. See, and so we're all just getting used to this, and we've adjusted, and that's life in 2020. So I wanted to ask you, speaking of life in 2020, where you can have the last dance and you can have something like that, and it got so much attention because of the times. They sped up the process. It was the smart move to move it up with nothing going on, and obviously had huge ratings. Let me just say this. I enjoyed your work. I know you did a lot of stuff in and around this, especially joining Scott Van Pelt on SportsCenter afterwards and getting reactions. Right. So I just wanted to tell you, great job on that. I stuck around every Sunday night just to watch the post-game coverage.
Oh, well, thanks. I think Will Bond will thank you as well, my partner in crime.
That's right. What did you think overall of the 10 episodes? Both of us were at the beginning of our careers, and we weren't mm-hmm. covering it. You were in the middle of it, so you have a different perspective. What did you think?
Well, you know what? I had forgotten how much drama there was. You know, something would come up in one of the episodes, and I would think to myself, oh, my gosh, that's right, that did happen. So when you look back on it, it's incredible that they won those six championships. When you consider the arguments about pay and all the things, the drama with Scottie Pippen and of course Rodman leaving in the middle of the playoffs to go to Vegas and all the things that transpired, you know, Horace Grant leaving and then Steve Kerr coming and John Paxson going. And when you look back on all of it and all the drama between Phil and Jerry Krause, of which I did know quite a bit about because I wrote quite a bit about all that. When you roll it all up into one, I'm just astonished they were able to win six championships with all of that going on.
Yeah, it's a good point. We talked about this and actually had a really good laugh on the show, just thinking about what if that was now, and you think about the, well, just the part of Michael Jordan golfing with one of the opponents and Danny Ainge in the middle of a playoff series. Could you imagine with today's social media? I mean, that Tony Romo got killed for going to Cabo on his off week.
Right. And I'm telling you, Larry Bird would have been, he would have blew his top. if he had known that Danny Ainge was playing golf with Jordan the day of, you know, the day before that playoff series, he would have had a fit. He was very vehemently against socializing with the opposition. He really hated it. In fact, you know, Dennis Johnson, before he came to the Celtics, you know, he played for Seattle, but he used to work out in the summertime in L.A., and he used to work out with all the Lakers because, you know, in the summertime, you just grab a game. And once Dennis Johnson ended up in a Boston Celtics uniform, he showed up for his usual off-season workouts, and they all told him to get lost. He couldn't play with them anymore.
Wow.
Different time, you know.
It was a different time. You know, it is amazing. You brought up the drama. And the NBA, I think, has been able to master it better than anybody. And the constant talk, right? I mean, they really have. I mean, throughout the decades, they've been able, whether it was good or bad, they were able to always generate a discussion piece. And, you know, we have a professional hockey team and NFL team here. We do have an NBA team in the state. But you've been around it for a long time. How has the NBA always been able to have kind of like this soap opera drama feel, almost like a documentary always going in the sport?
Right. Well, they were smart enough to understand, and I think it really did start with David Stern, that this is a league of stars. It's different than football. There's no helmets. There's only five players out there, and as some of them like to say, running around in their underwear. And so the players are very recognizable. And people feel a little, I think, more of a kinship to them because they know what they look like. And there's only, you know, there used to only be 12 to a team. Now there's 15. And so you got to know them a little more intimately than maybe some of the other sports that you were dealing with. You know, hockey, you're also dealing with helmets. In baseball, you've got, you know, baseball caps. And so, and I think the personalities were always allowed to bloom in the NBA. I think Stern understood that was good for business. I think Adam Silver understands the same thing. And so they gave their players freedom to be different and to express personalities. And by the way, they marketed that very successfully. So it's not like they were being just you know, very generous about this. They made money off those personalities as well.
Jackie McMullen on the line with this one of those things, and ESPN is going to air this on Sunday, is the backstory on LeBron James and the decision. It's not really about him choosing to go to Miami. It's more about the whole episode, you know, everything that came to be the decision. This is yet again another, you know, what along the lines of what we're talking about, the NBA on just a decision to go somewhere, either stay or go somewhere else, was a huge, huge spectacle for the sport.
Right, yeah, and it was crazy. I remember at the time, I actually happened to be in Bristol during that week, in the days leading up to it, and we were hearing the details of this quote-unquote the decision. Of course, it appeared on ESPN, and I just remember talking to David Stern, and he said to me, I'm trying to tell him, don't do this. And I remember going live on SportsCenter saying, don't do this, it's going to be a huge mistake. And it was a mistake that became even bigger because, you know, LeBron didn't even have enough courtesy to tell the Cleveland Cavaliers they weren't the team he was going to be with. And I think that's what everybody objected to. But it created what a firestorm it created. And then it continued when he went to Miami and they had that huge rally, and when he was saying not one, not two, not three. I mean, it was great drama. And LeBron has conceded in years since that he probably could have handled that a little differently.
Yeah. Jackie McMullen on the line with us. And one more from my end. And we had Jamie Little on the show yesterday, and she's NASCAR on Fox, and she was been right in the middle of all the coverage with Talladega and Bubba Wallace and doing great work. But I wanted to kind of get, because we've talked to Jamie over the years, just everything that's going on in our country, Jackie, and the challenges that, you know, while we're all moving, hopefully everything is moving in the right direction, just, mm-hmm. you know, everybody's had their challenges. And while you're well-respected in what you do, I have to believe that wasn't always the case as a female reporter or columnist. You probably had your challenges as well. So what do you make of some of the things going on in our country right now?
Yeah, it's nothing new, that's for sure. And, you know, of course, back when I broke into this industry, it was the early 80s. And I used to joke with everybody in Boston that I started working for the Boston Globe, and my name was Jackie McMullen. Everybody thought I was an Irish Catholic guy from Southie, you know. and it helped me out a lot because people didn't make up their minds about me. If my name was Nancy McMullen, you know, a lot of people probably wouldn't even read my copy. Remember, this is before I'm on the radio, before I'm on TV. Nobody knows what I look like.
Yeah.
And so I actually was fortunate to have a little bit of a cloak of anonymity when I first started. People thought I was a guy. And so they could decide, well, this guy stinks, or, yeah, I like this guy. He knows what he's talking about. And I think that helped me a lot. But I covered all the sports for the Boston Globe when I was young, when I was in my early 20s. I covered professional baseball and the NFL. I covered the Patriots, the Red Sox, the Bruins, everybody. And it was very difficult back then to walk into a Major League Baseball clubhouse. Very difficult, tough environment. And the Patriots, of course, pre-ownership of Robert Kraft, another very, very tough environment. And you just learn to keep your head down and do your job. And but the NBA was, even then, was a breath of fresh air. It was a great place for any journalist to go and just be judged on their merits, on what they did or didn't do, whether you were black, white, yellow, women, man, didn't matter. And I think that's probably in part why I gravitated towards the NBA.
Talking to Jackie McMullen, and Jackie, with that thought, I'm just curious, looking back, who were the most supportive people during that time in terms of maybe your coworkers at the Globe,
right,
or even some of the athletes that really went mm-hmm. out of their way to make you feel comfortable?
Yeah, I was really lucky. I mean, I worked for the greatest sports section of all time, and I'll take anybody on that wants to question me on that, because Will McDonough there and Bob Ryan and Lee Monfil and Peter Gammons and Kevin Paul DuPont and Ian Thompson, who is still one of my best friends, and these are all men, and they had my back every step of the way. But most importantly, my bosses did. Vince Doria, who went on to be a very accomplished executive at ESPN, and Don Squar, who also went on to be an accomplished executive at ESPN. They were my two primary bosses when I was young, and they were the other people that wouldn't stand for it. David Stern would not stand for it. And the players, again, in the NBA, Dennis Johnson in particular, God rest his soul, and Robert Parrish, they really looked out for me. And if people were giving me a hard time, they had to go through them. And by the way, Robert Parrish is a pretty big dude. And I remember saying to Robert once, thank you for that. Why? And he said, well, I think we figure you feel like we do sometimes. You know, 90% of the time when I walk into a business meeting, I'm the only black man in the room. I figure it's the same thing for you in your business. 98% of the time, you're the only woman walking into the room. So there was almost a little kinship there with some of the black athletes that I covered when I was young, because many of them would tell me, you know, I was raised by a very strong woman. Sometimes their dad wasn't around, and so they could really identify with a strong female presence, and they really looked out for me, and you never, ever, ever forget that. I will never forget it.
Boy, great stuff. And I'm with you on the Globe. It's a great thing. And as we know, the media is evolving. The sports page evolves. Another
right.
big part of your history is Sports Illustrated. I'm one that mm-hmm. used to look forward to every week when who's going to be on the cover and what great articles
right.
are going to be in there. And obviously, it'll probably never be the same. So what are your thoughts on how, you know, how the media is evolving with sports pages and sports writing these
right.
days?
Right. Very difficult. I'm a newspaper person at heart. I've been at ESPN for a while, but I still hope people think of me as a newspaper person. That's where I cut my teeth. I loved the Globe. I had two different stints there, totaling almost 20 years, and did work 5 years at Sports Illustrated, and, of course, very fortunate to be at ESPN now. But the difference is, I mean, we used to go to practice. We'd cover practices. They weren't closed. We would go there. In fact, that's how I got to know all the players, is I would go an hour and a half early because I was so young and so afraid I was going to miss something. I would get there early and end up having conversations with these players as they came into the practice facility. And you know, I think it's very difficult. I have great sympathy for young writers today or young journalists who are trying to make their mark because access is so limited. you only have post-practice access. Oftentimes they bring a player out, so it's a scrum, and you have to try to navigate. At, you know, everybody's going to hear your question and the answer from the athlete that you're talking with. And so it's becoming harder and harder now with these players as they form their own production companies. They want to give their content to fellow ex-players. We have some great podcasts now. You know, Matt Barnes does a great podcast, and some of the other ex-NBA players. Darius Miles, they do the Up and Smoke one, and players feel comfortable with other players, so they're a lot more frank and honest sometimes with them than they are with the regular media. So we have all sorts of challenges in front of us. And you know, when young people say to me, well, what am I supposed to do? I say, show up early and stay late. Show up to everything. If they have a charity event, show up to it. If they do a community service event, be there. Show up early to the game. You never know who's going to be warming up to get a few shots in 3 hours before the game. That's what we have to do now. You've got to be creative in ways where you can communicate with players and coaches and GMs, because it's a very difficult world out there right now.
Just like sports writing evolves, the game evolves of basketball. Mm-hmm. And you know, watching The Last Dance, it's funny, we remember the excitement, but you look at the final score, often it was 83-81, right, or, you know, a game mm-hmm. that's totally different than what we're seeing right now. The game really opened up, less hand checking, more freedom, and way right. higher scores. Of course, the guys are, you know, shooting the threes like they've never done before. But what right. what type of era do you enjoy the most, Jackie? We're all kind of in this moment, we're in time, it's frozen. Right. We're going back and watching. I just watched the 94 game seven the other day, the John Starks, where he had a real rough mm-hmm. day, and Patrick Ewing right. and those guys fell short, but it's so different looking back at those times.
Well, I mean, so I grew up in, you know, I'm a former post player, so I didn't mind the post play and the dominant centers. You know, there was a stretch there where 9 out of 10 league MVPs were all centers, and yet the last center to be the MVP, believe it or not, was Shaquille O'Neal in the year 2000. That's almost 20 years ago. So the game has changed, and it started with the elimination of hand checking, and it was by design. Stern and the league didn't like the low scoring games. They, you know, fans love scoring. They don't appreciate defense as much. They love scoring. So by eliminating those hand, you know, making the hand checking rules really stringent on the perimeter, players got to go to the line more. People started shooting three-pointers more, and it opened the game up. And that's the game we have today, which, by the way, I think is a beautiful game. I enjoy it. What I don't enjoy, and I think they need to adjust it a bit, is if you just breathe on Steph Curry as you swing past, or if James Harden, you know, jumps into you, they go to the line for three free throws. And I don't think that's how the game should be played. So I think they should lighten up a little bit on the touch fouls that go on up in the perimeter, and let those guys really earn it. And both of them are capable of it, by the way. Let's be for real here. Curry and Harden can score from anywhere. So I like both eras, because I just love the game, and I love watching the way the game evolves. I love watching bigs step out and hit threes. I think it's cool. Now, you know, is it what Giannis should be doing it late in the game? Probably not. But you know what? If the Bucks make it to the finals, they're going to pack it in against him, and they're going to dare him to hit that shot. So it's, you know, as long as there's strategy involved, which there is, and the defenses are more sophisticated than they ever were back in the 80s, I think it's a great product.
Last thing from us, the return to play for the league, and the Lakers yes. have learned that Avery Bradley is not going mm-hmm. to join the team, and there may be others. How do you think this return to play is truly going to look like in this bubble down in Orlando?
Right. Well, it feels to me a little bit like every day it's a little more fraught with peril. I certainly understand why they're trying to do it, and I think they will do it. And there will be fit and starts, and somebody will test positive, because there's just no such thing as zero risk in this environment. You know, we've already found out that Jokic, who plays for the Nuggets, is going to have to stay in Serbia a little longer because he's tested positive, even though he's asymptomatic. And listen, human nature being what it is, people are going to get bored with this bubble. It's going to be 3 months long if you make it all the way to the end. And people are going to step out of that bubble, and they're going to try to do it without anybody noticing. There's actually a snitch line for someone to call and report you if you do such a thing. So it's not perfect, but I think based on everything the NBA has done, they've taken this very seriously. They've done their due diligence. They're going to give it a try. Now, will it work? I'm not 100% sure it will, but we'll just have to wait and see. I think they've taken as many precautions as they can, but this is a very unpredictable virus. We still don't understand it. We don't have a vaccine for it. Cases are spiking all over the country, including Florida, by the way. The numbers are going up, up, and up. Is there going to be a second wave? There's so many variables we don't understand. So it's impossible to say, oh, yeah, once they get there, it's all going to be fine. I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, it does seem hard to believe. One thing that's been tough through these 4 months is sitting here talking about no sports for 4 hours a day, but I'll tell you one thing that's come out of this for us, and we've talked about this a lot. We've had some really, really, really memorable interviews, and I want to say thank you for – we can put your name on that list. Thanks for doing this. It was a lot of fun. You continue to be safe. Keep up the good work. We'll be watching, and hopefully we can talk to you down the road.
All right, guys. Enjoy my pal Mike Vrabel, one of my all-time favorites.
All right. We will pass that on. Thank you, Jackie.
All righty. Take care.
Jackie McMullen does great work covering the NBA for ESPN. Another good get here on the show. We will come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Wow, little Billy Squire bringing us back from the break. Good stuff there from Jackie McMullen. Hey, by the way, you can stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app. That's free and easy. You can enable our Alexa skill or Google Home and ask it to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. By the way, keep those options in mind as some of you people start heading out of town. This is kind of the time to do that. So that'll be the case for me next week. To be honest, Willie, I'm not complaining at all. I'm just being honest. Like, I'm kind of tired of, like, at this point, I'm getting a little fatigue of just sitting here talking about return to play. Like, I'm more than ready to see products. You know, I
know,
get it.
And we still got a ways to go.
Well, I know. That's why I need a break. Because I need more. I know that it's starting to come around, and now we've got golf back in full swing. And, by the way, I just saw, let's see why I'm bringing that up. A tweet that said sources have confirmed that there are multiple positive tests for COVID-19 on the PGA Tour, in addition to the one reported earlier this morning. So as they've returned to play, they're starting to get positive tests. We've been saying it. It's not a matter of if, it's when. And then how do you handle? That's a little bit different. That's not a team sport. So it's a little bit different on the golf side. But we've got, NASCAR, and certainly they've had our attention since they've come back, and UFC, but I'm just ready for more. Like I'm ready to get some live stuff going where we can talk about it rather than sitting here and just wondering what's going to be the hub city. By the way, we can cross two more cities off the list, so it looks like the NHL has whittled it down to six. Take Pittsburgh and Dallas off the list, and so we made our bold predictions. I don't know, what was it? Good 6 weeks ago, I don't know, whenever they came out with the list. And I pulled it up because I wrote it down. I think Chase is officially eliminated.
He's eliminated. He's 0 for 2, guaranteed.
He was 0 for 2.
Best shot is 1 for 2. You can still go 2 for 2.
I can still go. So Chase had Columbus and Dallas, so he is officially eliminated. You had Minnesota, so you're down to Vegas. I think you're going to win that one, and I had Vegas and Edmonton, and we'll see. At least I'm still in play. They're one of the six remaining, so we'll see how that goes. But if I'm getting back to what I was saying before, I'm just more than ready. We've had cool interviews. I meant that, what I said to Jackie McMullen. We had Bob Costas on last week. Jackie McMullen, I don't know when's the last time or if we've ever talked. Have we ever talked to Jackie McMullen?
Like, I don't remember. I don't remember
either.
Ever having her on. So that was really cool.
Yeah,
to have her on. I like. You never know sometimes what direction an interview is going to go, and I would include the Bob Costas interview with that. There's so many ways you can go with somebody like that who has such a rich history. But I love that stuff that Jackie was talking about her her days at the Boston Globe and the evolution of sports writing and her experiences as a woman journalist.
How about Robert Parrish?
Robert Parrish, yes.
That was really, really interesting. That was a good question by you to get her to go down that road and tell that story.
Yeah. So that has been the best part of sports talk radio for me. I will always remember some of these interviews we've had, a little more long form, where the person's not in a hurry. Maybe we're not in a hurry because there's not 17 games that we've got to talk about here. So we've tried to take advantage of that. I hope that's what keeps people listening through this, because I think those that have listened, you get rewarded with stuff like that. And we're trying every day to come up with fun people to talk to you like that.
Yeah. Let's go to Ed. He's on hold. He wants to weigh in. What's going on?
Hey, guys. How you doing this morning?
Good. How about you?
Good. Hey, great interview with Jackie. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Listen, I was just sitting back thinking, I just want to get your guys' opinion on something. You know, this virus, and I know we all want to get back to sports, and I can't wait, guys. But do you think that we will still have the passion that we had before? You know, I'm speaking of rivalries. Like, for example, I'm sure the people up in Baltimore could not wait to get us on the field and you know, to amend that loss from last year. But when there's a gap in the sport, you kind of lose the fire, man. And I'm just wondering, you know, are we going to I'm sure the stadium will be filled, but it may be because we want to get back to it. But are you really going to have the Cowboys and Giants rivalry, you know, the Titans and the Ravens? You know, you think about boxing, you know, you lose the heavyweight championship, you can't wait to get the rematch. And it usually happens within 4 or 5 months. And we don't know here. I mean, I'm just sitting back thinking, are we really going to have the fire that we had before?
Are you asking from a player's perspective or a fan's perspective, or both?
Yeah, from the fan. You know, look, I hate the Colts. But you know what? I haven't thought about the coach in a year or so now. And whenever we get back on the field again, you know, it's just, I don't know if I'm gonna hate him as much as I did before.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? I know it sounds kind of odd or weird, but I'm just thinking. I mean, this virus has really, really set back sports, man, in a way that I thought nothing could. And so I'm looking at it from that, from the fans' perspective.
Good question. Thanks for the phone call. That is very thought-provoking. I don't know. That's interesting. I don't know if I've really thought about it until Ed just brought it up. What do you think?
You know, I think it will be different for a while. It just like everything, I think we're all trying to envision how we get through this, right? And I'm looking ahead. I'm looking at today. I'm looking at tomorrow. You know, you try to look through all the different lenses. But I think, you know, when we do get to the other side of this, you might have passion amongst the fans and the players who will have so much excitement to be in front of a full audience. You might have an extra level of intensity. That's what I see. Now, the economic part of this might make that tough in some places. You're going to have an enthusiasm and a thirst for live competition, you know, it's going to be awesome, I think. But the key is just trying to fight through all of what we're going to be going through, right? It's just like every day you hear these positive tests and you're just going to have to fight through it, right?
Well,
hopefully you can do it without having to stop. And we may have to stop again, right? We'd have to face that reality.
Let's hope
you heard Jackie
Lamone
say, is
yes.
She 100% sure that the season will be executed? No, you can't be 100% sure.
No.
But you're going to do everything you can to get through it.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is I think it's pretty safe to say, Ed said that the stands will be full. I think it's pretty safe to say they won't be full. There may be fans in the stands in 2020, but I don't think we're ever going to get the raucous. I don't think we're going to see the raucous
atmospheres.
Not in 2020. Right. So that does change it in my mind. And it's interesting because yesterday I was watching some of the PGA golfers speak on this very subject as they head into the Travelers this weekend. And we had on Bob Herrig yesterday talking about the PGA Tour coming back. They've been back for a couple of weeks, and you brought up like the first major, and he said, hey, the PGA Championship was just announced. It's been green-lighted. It's a go. No fans. And, you know, this weekend is kind of a they were talking about this is kind of like a hidden gem up in Connecticut where, like, the fans can get rowdy, and it's, you know, these crazy galleries. And and the golfers were weighing in on it. It was interesting. Jordan Spieth, I think it was Jordan Spieth that said, hey, I think it's actually easier for me without the fans because I don't have all the distractions. I can just focus on what I'm supposed to be doing, where some of the other golfers were saying some agreed with that, and some of the other golfers were saying, hey, I kind of need the gallery. I need the fans. I love that atmosphere. I love the energy, right? I feed off of that. Where some guys are like, man, I can just hone in on, he said it's, a lot of them were saying, it feels like a practice round, you know, a glorified practice round that counts. Yeah. Because you don't have the people there. You're just out there playing the course. And he said, you know, a lot of them were saying, hey, I can just focus on what I'm there to do. Where others were going, man, I really enjoy the craziness of the galleries. I enjoy the fans talking to you. Sometimes it works against you, right? They can also get in your head. you can have it affect you. But it was just interesting to hear some of the professional golfers' perspective of not having fans currently at their events. And going back on what started this conversation, what Ed was saying, I think not having fans in the stands, especially in the NBA, the NHL, MLS, you know, and their return to play, there will not be fans. I think it will be a little bit, it will affect, the rivalry will not, there's no way it could feel the same, right? I mean, I can't speak for players, but I don't know how you could honestly feel the same as if you were at their place. I mean, you know, we both know, we've been traveling with the team. You travel year round, but I've been fortunate enough the last 5 years or whatever to be with the team and with you on the road during playoff series. And so I know what that environment is like. It's crazy, right? It's you against everybody there. And that's what the player feels. And it feels like a rivalry. Like 2 years ago against Winnipeg, that was intense, right? You could feel everything. Heck, even the Colorado, we talked about their environment, man. It was, you could feel it was a divisional playoff game. It'll be hard. You can't just make that magic be there with no fans, right? You're not in a hostile environment, or you don't have your home crowd. The Predators can't recreate how difficult Bridgestone Arena can be. So there's no way it's going to feel the same. I feel confident in that. But whether it feels like a rivalry still, I don't know. It's a good question.
I think you separate. I think you've hit on, from an atmosphere standpoint, there's no question it's going to be very different. But from a competitive standpoint, I don't know. I think if you've been in a good pickup game for basketball, right, it can be really intense and competitive, even though there's no crowd, right? It just gets down to the core competitiveness that everybody has. I think that will be there, because I think what you find in any competition, even a good game of ping pong or something, they can be very competitive. The best competitors, you know, rise up in those situations. So I don't know that the intensity will be that different. And so therefore the rivalry, you know, how do you define rivalry? Is it just the level of competition, or is the atmosphere a part of it? If you're including the atmosphere, then yeah, it's going to be different.
How could it
until
not?
We get on the other side?
Don't
of it.
You think?
But he said, I think Ed was asking, though, will it ever be the same? I think it'll bounce back, and maybe bounce back more intensely when we do get the green light to have everybody.
But let me ask this, and let me bring Marquise in. Marquise, I'm sure you've been to an Iron Bowl, right?
Yeah, okay. I have.
But you know what that rivalry, we know what that rivalry is like, but you've actually been a part of it in the stands. You know how nasty that can be.
Yes.
Can Auburn and Alabama truly feel like the Iron Bowl? Can it truly feel like a rivalry game if there was nobody in the stands, or 15,000 people in the stands?
I think it's different for college football, because those rivalries stick in college football. And I think that's the difference, because I watched the kick six at work. I was working watching the kick six, and that rivalry and that passion that I had for that game, it still stuck, even though I was watching it on a television screen. And, you know, it, even with Alabama and Tennessee games, that, you know, those rivalries, a lot of times in college football, those stick because those are deep. A lot of times they're in-state rivals. A lot of times they're just rivals that have been passed on from generations to generations in your family. So I just think from the college football landscape, nothing changes. But from, like, every other element, like, I'm a Laker fan. I look at the Celtics as a rival, but I really don't even look at it as a rivalry anymore. I don't look at it as passionate as I do an Alabama or a Tennessee rivalry or a Auburn or a, you know, Alabama rivalry. So it just all depends on the sport, because I think college football.
That's probably fair. College, you have to probably push to the side in its own category. The professional sports is a
yeah, because professional, like, they really don't, like, mean anything, especially in the NBA, because the NBA has changed so much. Like, the Warriors and the Clippers are now a rivalry, but it's not a rivalry anymore. On the earlier stages of Steph Curry and Chris Paul and them going at it, yeah, that was a rivalry, but it's not anymore. So those NBA rivalries, they die down really quick. College football, those stick, and those are forever ingrained in people's brain.
But, I mean, does the Steelers-Ravens rivalry lessen this year? I mean, those two fan bases, those two teams hate each other. Steelers-Browns, the same way.
But you're just going to be sharing it in a different way. Like, everybody's going to be still watching, right?
They'll still be watching, but will they still have – Ed's asking the question, will they still have the same exact feelings that they've always had? I don't know.
Like we said at the beginning of the show, someday when we look back on this, we're all going to say, remember 2020 and how crazy that was?
If you say, what do you mean? Then we're going to say, what rock were you living yeah. under? How old are you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if you don't remember 2020, how old are you? Yeah, you're right. There's nothing.
It'd just be a different way of expressing the same. But the rivalry itself, I don't think will ever die.
Like Alabama,
good rivalry will not stop.
Like Alabama has a thing on Twitter, especially when their rivalry start. It's like Tennessee Hate Week, and I think a lot of colleges have that. Tennessee Hate Week, you know, Auburn Hate Week, and those things are just social media alone. So obviously, like, those will stay. I just like with Ravens and Steelers. Like, I can't even remember the last time they had a game where I said, "Ooh, this is going to intensify that rivalry." I just don't remember the last time they had that game. It may have been when Big Ben was quarterback or healthy and Joe Flacco was quarterback or Ray Lewis was playing. And like, I just don't remember those, because those rivalries just die down as the years go by in professional sports, that is.
So MLB, the four divisional opponents, you'll play each other 10 times. So
yeah, so Red 40 Sox, out of your 60 games are going to be against your division, which
division,
is
division, right. So,
I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that will be interesting. Yeah, Yankees, Red Sox, 10 times out of 60 games. That goes a long way into determining who's going to win that division.
Mm-hmm. And they're going to see each other a lot. And so, does that change anything? I don't know. I don't know how they're going to feel. Like I said, I can't speak for players. I'd like to know. The fan bases, I don't know. You know, and also, your life, for people's lives who have been affected. I know you're painting the angle that is absolutely true, Willie, that, you know, I just said it. Like, I'm getting a little bit of fatigue while I enjoy our interviews. Like, I'm, you know, like, okay, can we get some live stuff to talk about? But what about all the people where their lives have been really affected, whether they've lost their job, lost their business? You know, there is that element, and they just don't have the same, like they're not in a great place. So not everybody is going to feel the same, and they may be big sports fans, but they just don't have the same enthusiasm because 2020 has sucked for them, you know, so that you have to factor that in. And maybe that was part of why the question was asked. I mean, for all the people that have had a really, really rough year, you know, how will they feel? Well, on one hand, a lot of us and most are really excited. Some sports fans, because their life's been turned upside down, might be going, you know what, I need to try to recoup my life back before I worry about, you know, the big rivalry that I have in my life.
No question. That's something we'll have to find out. But I do think when we get there, there will be a lot of enthusiasm just to watch, just to shake it up. If you're a sports fan, I don't think that – I think we'll be really excited, intrigued to see what it looks like. We're going to see something we've never seen before. That's always a reason to watch sports, right? You see something maybe you never saw. We were talking with Bernie Miklas last week. The random Cardinals game we went to, we saw something we never saw before. A guy flip over the top of a catcher and jump over the tag and score a run.
Yep.
You know, that's something you always remember, and it makes you want to come back and watch another game. What's going to happen in this game? We don't know.
Look, if we can get excited about the NFL draft just because we've never seen it that way, you know, we could certainly get excited about sports that we've never seen a certain way, right? So, yeah, that intrigue is going to be there because you're right. That element is in play. We're going to see something we've never seen before, and let's hope that we never have to see again, because let's hope in our lifetime we never have to go through this again. But you're right about that. This return to play for all these sports is going to be something brand new. I mean, we've never, ever, none of us have ever seen this in our lifetime. And I'll speak for me, and I hope never to see it again in my lifetime. But we'll also be very curious to see what it looks like. We will come back. We made a big announcement yesterday about Vanderbilt football and men's basketball being under the Cromwell Media umbrella, and we're excited about that. Joe Fisher, the fine play-by-play voice for Vanderbilt, is a part of that. We'll tell you how on the other side to kick off the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.